You're listening to the APSE Podcast, the Association of People Supporting Employment First, with your host, Chris Davies. Today's podcast is brought to you by Reach for Resources, a nonprofit providing individualized, competitive employment services for people with disabilities. We believe our community is a better place when it is inclusive and everyone, regardless of ability, has the chance to be successful. Learn more at reachforresources.org.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Minnesota APSE Podcast. Here we are, Season 5, Episode 3, and we have a real special treat for you here today. For the first time ever in Minnesota APSE podcasting history, we are co-hosting this event, and we couldn't have a better guest to co-host it with. Our guest today is Lee Svukulic. She is a referral and assurance quality specialist with Kaposia Inc., and so much more than that, as we will soon learn. But very excited, Dupree, to have you here as our co-host. How are you feeling about this?
I'm feeling good. This is a really good opportunity to be a part of the Minnesota APSE Podcast. And, I was on the episode season 4, last year. And so it's good to be back, and, let's have a very good show today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm excited. So, we always like to, as you two know, and some of our audience know that have watched our podcast before, we always like to talk a little bit about, what APSE is. So, National APSE is the only national membership organization that solely promotes integrated, customized, competitive employment. And I know that Dupree and Lise are fully behind, that movement and that idea. And we have state chapters. We have 40 state chapters right now. We, of course, have a Minnesota chapter, which is where the birth, is how this podcast was born, if you will. And we're just, very excited to have everybody here. We always like to make sure we give a visual description before we get going. So I'll start, since I've got the microphone in front of me and I'm already talking. I am a white male. I have a red beard with a little peppered gray in there. I'm very bald and used to have red hair back in the old days. I am wearing blue jeans and I asked our last guest this because I couldn't figure out the color of my garments. So what color would you say this is? Coal blue? All right, I'm wearing a coal blue sweater with a blue zip-up vest. So let's go over to you next, Dupree.
Hi, I'm Dupree Edwards, and I'm a black American male. I go by he, him pronouns. I have black, curly hair. I got a nice goatee, a little lovely smile. I got a black vest, zip up vest, and a hoodie underneath. And I'm glad to be your co-host today on the Minnesota APSE Podcast, where it is employment first. So
I am Lise Svukulic. I am a white female. I have hair. I have long hair, which I still curl. I don't have a mustache, but sometimes I have to pluck now that I am over 50. I am wearing a Norwegian sweater that is black, gray, and white striped. And I'm really looking forward and so grateful to be a part of this podcast this morning.
That's fantastic. Thanks, everybody, for those descriptions. All right. What do you say we get into this, huh? Yeah. All right. So we're going to have Dupree sort of take the lead on asking the questions today. So I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, Dupree Edwards.
Thank you, Chris. And I'm so glad and grateful to be co-hosting on the Minnesota APSI podcast. And anybody else wants to do this, have a very opportunity to do this. I'm very glad to be here with Lise today. And I just want to make sure at Minnesota APSI, we always like to know a little bit about you and where you grow up, or, you know, what was like, what's your passion, you know, things like that. So, I'm going to start off with this. Tell me about yourself growing up and your family.
Well, I was born in Jersey. I am the oldest female granddaughter. That was a joy to both of my grandparents because there are a lot of boys. I have lots of brothers and sisters, and even more so in a blended family. I have very fond memories of growing up in the East Coast, going to the Jersey Shore. One of my uncles had a yacht, and we would go sailing on the Atlantic. I had a very terse learning lesson when I was very young, being that my mother and my father didn't have swimming lessons. It was very important for both of them to have all of us kids learn how to swim. I was on my Uncle Albert's yacht, and I was ready to jump off and go swimming in the ocean, and he grabbed me by my ankles. He spoke so sternly to me, "Eyes on me, never, ever jump off a boat in the ocean." We put a piece of rope and to see what the undertow is. And it was really bad that day. Well, my Uncle Albert told me a story that him and his buddy anchored the yacht and thought, hey, we're going to go in, it's hot. And the undertow took them. And it took them hours to get back to shore. So I learned that the ocean was a dangerous, but magical, lovely place. And I have very fond memories going to Atlantic City. We always go into the city and watch a Broadway show, eating at the best restaurants. When I was little, I didn't like anything other than peanut butter sandwiches, no jelly. So it wasn't until I older that I appreciated a lot of New York food. My best memory of food is Entenmann's crumb cake. When anybody goes back east, I always ask them, here's $10. I have no idea how much it costs now. It gets getting more and more expensive, and it reminds me a little bit of home. My family, or my father, ended up getting a job offer in Chicago. So we moved to Chicago, where one of my sisters were born. My father couldn't hold that job, so we got transferred to Minnesota, the boondocks, which my mother called this place. And she did not like living here at all. It was very, very difficult. We moved to Minnetonka, which was predominantly very, very white. And I grew up with diversity, so I heard languages. My friends were people of a different nationality, but as a kid, who cares? You don't see it that way. But in Minnesota, in the 1960s, it was very, very different. So it was quite an adjustment. And then when we went back home four times a year, it was even a harder adjustment to come back here, where I would have to learn how to not be direct or say things that were considered not politically correct. East Coast does a lot of bantering without offense at the time, and Minnesota was not like that. However, the metropolitan area is extremely progressive in their ideology, which my mom really liked.
Yeah, that's very good. Thank you for telling me you're from the Jersey Shore. I like your story. And
I'm from Jersey. I'm not Jersey. From the Jersey Shore.
Well, Jersey. I mean, you've seen the Jersey Shore, but you were, you know, go there a lot. So that's really
Sandy Hook.
Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful story. And I, you know, I like where you grow up, and I really admire about the East Coast, even though I don't know a lot about it. But it's always some things that I really wanted to do there. And I do respect people that are from the East Coast in New York and New Jersey. Always something where I wanted to live. I was a very big New York sports fan out there, like the New York Jets, like the New York Mets, you know, and the Giants. I just loved everybody about Times Square, about things. So earlier as we talked, I was just trying to tell you that I'm a big fan of New York, and hopefully one day I will go down there. So I just love everything you talked about of New York. But here at Minnesota APSE Podcast, we talk about employment, and I've seen you had a lot of employment that you were a mental health coordinator.
Yes. I have a degree, a four-year bachelor's of science in human services with an emphasis on disability studies. So I always had a lot of passion for people, for vulnerable adults, and for people that needed to be empowered to become interdependent in our community. So I had a lot of different jobs in social services with my degree. And of course, in social services, you don't make a lot of money. So I worked two full-time jobs and a third job.
Yeah. And to our listeners, I'm going to tell you what Lise did in her career. And it's all about disability community and employment first, as she continues to help our community and thrive and live our best lives and making sure that we're working in the community. So yeah, she's a mental health coordinator, an employment consultant, a psychiatric technical, yeah, and a private tutor ring. Yeah. So, wow, that's really awesome. And I heard you do very good work. I really want to know your position now at Composia, and what's that been like for you? And I know you talked to a lot of case managers and things like that. And it's actually right up your alley, you know? You know, I understand that you got back to work and you love it. And yeah, just tell me a little bit about Composia and what do you like about here?
Well, I am so grateful. I can't tell you how grateful I am that I was offered a job. It'll be 2 years in August. And I interviewed for the position 6 months before I began work. And I never thought that I would work again after my critical car accident in July of 2017. It was devastating to me. And I thought that I would never be capable of just working again in mainstream, in a competitive role since my disability. So interviewed with Dana and Chris, And my attitude was, I'm going to do the interview as authentically me. And I didn't sugarcoat anything. And Chris is laughing because I do have some testimonies. I worked with incarcerated individuals in the prison system. I worked with individuals with severe and persistent mental illness. This was before my critical car accident, as an employment consultant and housing coordinator as well.
Yeah.
I worked with individuals that were on a JAVIS, which means that they were at Anoka State Hospital under a commitment. The focus is that you don't go to Anoka State Hospital and stay there for the rest of your life. It's integrated. They want you to get stabilized, come out, you're on a JAVIS, provisional discharge, and those individuals go into adult foster care. And so I was a mental health coordinator in a variety of different group homes. Yeah. So I worked with people that had TBIs, traumatic brain injuries, and it's each person is very uniquely themselves. I never wanted to classify somebody as like, oh, you have a developmental disability, so this will be my approach with you. Or, oh, you're incarcerated, and this is the way I'm going to treat you. No, that's not the way to build trust.
Yeah, because everybody is valued in their own way.
Absolutely.
And they are proved to be listened to. And you really, you really took the time to listen to them and give them the best opportunity to fulfill their life, whether they were in trouble, whether they did something that they didn't know they did. And you really took them under their wings. And I really am looking forward to interview to you today, because I've been there, you know, in your work that you've done. I've been in, I was almost committed once, you know, and been in a lot of hospitals, and I grew up in the foster care system. So it was really good to really actually know that, hey, you know, you're making a difference in those people's lives. And I'm glad that you made a career out of it, and you're passionate about it. And it's really good that you help our community.
Thank you. And I appreciate that, Dupree.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that you had to experience what you had to experience as well. However, it built character in you.
Yeah.
And that's the most important part. I mean, your resiliency and your passion to still, you know, move on for better tomorrows.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, I heard you were talking about your car accident in 2017. I just wanted to know that you already talked a little bit about it. But is there any challenges you faced after the car accident?
Oh, yeah.
Before you got the job at Kaposia?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Oh.
Absolutely devastating. I did not know I had a brain injury. Here after my car accident, my adrenaline was going so much. And remember, Dupree, I was working two full-time jobs and a third job. And my first thought was, I need to call my supervisors, because the people that I support or the meetings that I had, I wanted to make sure that they were okay. And that's always been my mindset, to put myself second. Well, all of a sudden, I started not remembering how to get to work. Been at the job for years, and I would get lost. Or I would get up from my office chair and I would walk right into a wall because I thought that was the door. and the lights were bothering me, and I would get like, I had this anger inside that it scared me. And sound sensitivity and smell. And my coworker who shared an office with me after a couple of weeks, and she has a PhD in psychiatry. She very gently said to me, "Lise, you're acting like my mom, and her mom has a brain injury. Have you gone to see a doctor?" And this was after 1 week. And I said, "No," you know, stubborn, you know, false pride, denial. And I went to go see my doctor, and she did some testing and said, "Look, you have a post-concussion injury. Tell me more." And at that time, I was still in denial, but I went, and she said, "I'm going to make a referral to you at the University of Minnesota." So that wasn't for a couple weeks. I continue to work poorly at all my jobs. Mm. And people were noticing, this isn't the same lease. And my head kept hurting, and it was getting worse. What I later found out is that when my head hit the steering wheel and the airbag, is that your brain's injury can slowly swell. And that's what happened to me. So before I went to the University of Minnesota, there was this quest, like symptoms of brain injuries on the computer, on the internet. And I'm by myself, and I'm looking at the questions, and I had every single one of the symptoms. And it was really scary, because there it was. You know, I would be quick to anger because I would get frustrated with myself. I couldn't find the words. Methodology was... I couldn't figure out new things, even old things that I hadn't done for a while. And so when I finally went to the U, they did a series of in-depth tests. And yes, I had a brain injury. So first, it's always denial. And then it's, well, it's going to get better. You know, I just need to rest. And for somebody that didn't sleep for years because I worked so much, I was sleeping like 16 hours a day. And that's really common with brain injuries. I would get up and I would be so tired, I'd go back to sleep. And so trying to get the necessary help for a brain injury has been very daunting. And I think the biggest thing that was the most hardest for me, Dupree, was people have a certain window of time that they are willing to be supportive to you. Yeah. And my whole life changed. I had to take medication morning, noon, and evening. I couldn't read the bottles. And so my daughter said that she would help. Well, she pre-packed my medication for 2 weeks, and then we're ending the second week, and she got too busy and couldn't fill them. And people in my church family, I attended an evangelical church for 20 years, and they prayed over me. And after a while, they say, Aren't you over this yet? And I found that so insulting, and it really hurt my feelings. Or, I prayed for you, why aren't you better? Mm. Really? And I had a woman call me on the telephone and tell me that God spoke to her, even though when she initially called me, I was having an extreme, terrible pain day. Where, remember, I'm still sleeping a lot. I've not been stabilized. I had to try all these different medications, yada, yada. And she called me and I said, I can't talk to you. My head hurts. I will call you later on. 45 minutes later, she called me on the telephone and said, God told me to tell you the reason why you're not healed is you have hate in your heart for a president that's currently in our office back in the day. Wow. Scott is my witness. And this is the type of, and I think, you know, that was spiritual abuse. Even people saying, you know, I prayed for you. Why aren't you better? Or I'm hurting so bad. I have church members or my daughter that live close by just to come over and be with me through this. And people are not willing in my circle to do that. And it was so lonely and I was angry and my career was over. I had to quit all my jobs. You know, I was the type of person, Dupree, that in one of my jobs, I had almost 3 months of sick time.
Wow.
My second job, I had 2 months of sick time. So this is how dedicated and loyal I was to my jobs. And I wanted to die. I didn't have plans to take my life, but I truly wanted God to take me. And I wrote an obituary. I wrote a will. And I was convinced that God was going to take me. Well, unfortunately, people get freaked out by that. And instead of wanting to help me, threaten me by putting me on a 72-hour hold. And the therapist that I had, she'd say, do you have plans? Like I did when I was working. No. And instead of really listening to me, she went with this stupid protocol to cover her butt and put me in the hospital. That destroyed the trust that I had with the social services system. Is that going through the motions of having a disability later in life when you're, you know, completely abled and then you become disabled, you go through the stages of grief, denial, hurt, anger, sadness, deep sadness, and they all are jumbled up all at the same time. And I was so deeply betrayed by a church family that I attended for 20 years and also my daughter. It deeply, deeply hurt me. And believe me, I was no angel. I thrashed out. You know, there's a New York saying, you drew first blood, I'm coming for you. And yet nobody ever took responsibility that they drew first blood. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
And so the whole social services system took a really long time, such as Social Security disability. There's a 2-year waiting period unless you have stage 4 cancer. I realize that if you have stage 4 cancer or you are a permanent quadriplegic or paraplegic, you pretty much get it automatically. But TBIs, mental health conditions, yada, yada, there is at least a 2-year wait. How do you survive on general assistance on, I think it's $178 a month, and I got $34 in food stamps. Who pays my rent? How do I go about doing this? And I remember how upset I would get when I was a professional helping individuals wait that time out. And now I'm going through it. And at my hearing for Social Security, I had an advocate who, by the way, they want a cut of your money. So I think that's a racket. But when I got there, you know, there's a trial. I don't know. Did you have the same thing? Are you on SSDI?
Yes, I am.
So did you have to go forth or did you get it right away?
Actually, I've been on SSI ever since I was in the foster care system.
Okay. So you've never had to appeal or go forth?
No, no.
I mean, it's really sad.
Yeah.
It's so depleting. And so when you go there, there's like, okay, there's the judge. And then there's the prosecuting person who tries to deny you. Mm-hmm. And then there's your advocate and myself. Well, the guy was talking and I wasn't having it. And, you know, we had all my doctor's affidavits, yada, 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 yada. And when the judge was asking me questions and I answered them and he said, you know, we're done. Do you have any questions? And I said, yeah, I do. And I said, why do you allow a 2-year wait for people to get on Social Security? And I guess my East Coast came out and, because I was done. I mean, you know, when I told you, when I'm done, look out. But I was professional. And apparently the prosecutor was from the Bronx.
Oh, wow.
Didn't say a word. But I kept seeing him smiling and kind of chuckling because I said to the judge, you're breaking my balls. And I couldn't, it's like, oh, my God, I can't believe I said that. And the guy started laughing. I immediately got Social Security disability judge. No, she gets it. And I'm like, it didn't register with me because of my brain injury. And my advocate came out and said, great, you get Social Security disability. She said, I do. And, you know, I didn't hear it properly. And the guy came out and said, good job. And my advocate said, he's from the Bronx. He didn't have to refute anything that you said. You were right on. So that was really encouraging. But I got the chutzpah and the moxie. How about all these other people that really, and you know, this is where my passion is, Dupree. I got it because I got the chutzpah, but I also have a 4-year degree. And that still didn't help. I was still herded in like everybody else, which was unfortunate, to try to get services of case management. My gosh, I am now on my 6th case manager. My first couple absolutely sucked. There are agencies that I would never, ever, ever use again. So in my professional, there's agencies that I didn't use, but I was kind of forced through the Dakota County system to go with these agencies. And I said, well, they're not very good. And I have to go through the whole process of the intake, you know, the case manager, and they weren't doing their job because I knew what their job was. And then I would get frustrated and I'd get very direct. And of course, they didn't like me telling them that they weren't doing their job, which they weren't. The last 4 case managers that I've had with Accord have been absolutely phenomenal. I love them. I have promoted them here at Kapoja because these case managers know what they're doing. but they also know through their coworkers. She's very direct. She knows the services that she wants. The social services system is not the best. I've learned to have a lot of patience. I've also learned that we have professionals in the social services system that some may not stay very long. And unfortunately, that's not a healthy environment for people that have disabilities, because you want your support system to be steady. And it's not, because you have people that are getting other jobs or quitting, and you are having to start over and over and over again. And for me, I don't think that's a healthy environment for people that have disabilities.
Wow. Yeah, I hear you. But I just want to say, thank God that you're here. You know, thank God that you're here. And I want to say that, you know, you understood what, because you worked in the field, you understood what you were going through and how it was happening, because of individuals that you work with have development, you know, delays or, you know, things like that. You start to experiencing, and you said, hey, and I just admired how you handled all that, you know, whatever you were dealing with. And the church, just like, why aren't you better? I mean, sometimes in the stigma, you know, they think disability is a sickness that just will go away. And that's just a myth.
Through prayer.
Through prayer, yeah. And it's just really crazy. But I really do respect that you throughout your struggles and challenges, that you stuck up for us, that you defended the community, and you said, hey, now I understand what the individual I was working with is going through and why it's so hard for them to get SSI or SDI. You know, now I know why they have to wait a long time. Now I know why they're changing social workers so much. You know, I have to go to the right place. And a lot of people with disabilities don't know how to do that. And I'm glad that you understood and you help other people along the way to try to find other case managements that work for them. And I really, really appreciate that. You know, and yeah, you're just great. and I'm glad that you used your, you know, East Coast thing, and the judge was from the Bronx. Oh wow, that was
the opposing counsel.
The opposing counsel was from the Bronx. Yes. Oh yeah. I'm glad.
I do want to interject on something that I think that is so paramount. When I first started working with individuals, many of them copped an attitude, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. And so after a while, you know, being that I'm East Coast, you know, what's going on? Why are you copping an attitude with me? And the reaction and the response was totally humbling. They would say, how long are you going to be here? You're just going to quit on me. And it was like, whoa, these people don't want to invest in me. The people that I serve and support do not want to invest in me, because my position is not trustworthy to them. And I ended up having longevity in all of my jobs. And I told them, and by the way, people that are in walkers or in wheelchair, you don't stand up over them. You sit so your eyes are, you know, vertical with each other. And I would tell them, I love my job. I plan on being here for a while. Can you trust me so we can start our journey together and partner together for you. I don't think they ever heard that.
Yeah.
It changed the relationship. And I was amazed. These people are, oh my gosh. I mean, I think I learned more from them than they did from me. And I have to tell you, Dupree, after my car accident, you know how your person served are not allowed to contact you. Mm-hmm. I had my incarcerated guys that were in gangs find me on Facebook and private message me, where are you at? What's going on? And it was heartbreaking. I said, I can't respond to you for 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the way it is. And that's sad too, because you do need closure. You know, at least tell them, hey, I was in a critical car accident, but hang in there, you know, keep it up. You know, you're doing great. I think that that is something that is very much of value and needed. So I just wanted to add that as well.
Yeah, because I'm going to tell you, we're always, you know, when we work receiving services in this business, I was always told when I was growing up that people come and go, that you build new relationships. And sometimes I was like that. I was like, man, I'm just going to lose it because I got to go get better opportunities. And I couldn't accept that at the time because, like, we worked professionally well together. And why you got to go, you know? And it really is hard to accept because, you know, I get frustrated too. Like, oh man, they're probably here for 2 years. They're probably, especially when young people come into this business and you start to get a little bit more of a relationship with them, they start to leave you and like, whoa, you know? So I just thank you for actually, you know, sticking and communicating with people that you have served. And I just hope other people could follow that when they worked in the industry as long as you have. So, yeah, thank you. Continue with that. Sorry.
That's A-okay.
Yeah.
My life has totally changed. I mean, first of all, I'm a rock and roll gal. You know, I am older than dirt and grew up at a time where concerts were literally $10. You know, the old Met Center.
Yeah.
And, you know, AC/DC, Van Halen, Rush, Aerosmith.
Oh,
I mean, you name the Styx. I mean, you name the bands. I was there. And, you know, Guns N' Roses. And, you know, my daughter knows completely all the albums cover to cover. And, you know, crank it up in the car and we'd sing loudly. I can't take music. I couldn't go to church because the praise and worship music was so loud. And the noise after church, and I, you know, I finally got a walker. People would run into me and not even say that they were sorry. And it was a rude, rude awakening. So music was something that I always turned to. And I was a band geek. I played the trumpet, you know, when I was growing up. And even classical music, it depends on the song. And so that was taken from me. I used to love being out in the sun. Sun goddess, you know, it used to be a fad too. You know, I used to lay out in the sun all the time. I can't take bright lights at all. None. And here is an example of how I get triggered as life has been after the accident. So every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I live in a large apartment complex. Mm-hmm. The garbage trucks would come. So one day it was garbage. And then, and the garbage is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then Tuesdays and Thursdays was the recyclable. Both times, those stupid garbage trucks would back up and that loud beeping noise that raises the dead for people in Iowa drives a nun to drink.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of my East Coast coming out. But I would get so angry. It was like I literally wanted to throw a rock at them. Or people in the morning that are having car problems or truck problems, turn the car, rev it up. And it's, you know, you want to yell at them. It's so insensitive. But it was me. It's not them. It's my disability. And that's what's so frustrating is that I can't control what goes around outside of me. So I have to adapt. So I have actually three sets of filtered glasses, sunglasses. I also have blue tinted sunglasses for my computer. Depending on the days, I have to wear them when I am working or on my computer. The only good thing about having a brain injury is that I don't need a meteorologist.
Yeah.
I can tell at least 2 days beforehand, and this winter has been really rough. Dana and I were talking this morning, and we've had this whole winter these high fluctuations of weather, and I am so humbled. I worked, my scheduled hours are 10 hours a week. I notice that, and I love to work, so sometimes I work longer, is that my heart is very passionate, but my disability is not. So here's a perfect example. Yesterday, had a terrible weekend with the weather. Remember, it snowed and then it got warm on Monday. And yeah, I got really bad leg cramps. My head was hurting really bad. And I had my sixth surgery on a part of my head. And that was exacerbating my head pain. So Saturday and Sunday, I hardly got any sleep. Monday, you know, I worked. Went to go see one of my specialist doctors. But on Wednesday, after I got done with work, I could tell I'm pushing to my limit. I went to bed and slept 6 hours. That is how your brain, you got to work out with your brain. And so one of the things that I've learned is that I schedule everything in the morning most times so I can rest in the afternoon or even lay down for an hour if I can. I would like to take a nap before my alms worker comes at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or I schedule medical appointments either at 3 o'clock in the afternoon after I take a nap, or Tuesdays and Thursday mornings when I'm not working. So does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Knowing my limitations has been very difficult.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well,
now we can go to returning to the workforce.
Yeah, thank you. I'm actually going to pass this to Chris. Chris, do you want to?
Sounds like Dupree is passing me the baton for a while. Is that right, Dupree?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, you wanna take the seat I've had. I gotta tell you, it has been an absolute treat to have the best seat in the house for this conversation. Listening to both of you, just really, you know, pour your hearts out into this podcast. And be so real with the audience. I know the audience is enjoying this very much. It's been very powerful. So, okay. So it sounds like, you know, we just wanted to talk about, thank you, Lise. Yeah, so there were a lot of things that led up to returning to the workforce. Maybe talk about some of those key pieces that you got in place that allowed you to get to a place where you could interview and get back to work, and what it has meant to you.
That is an excellent question. In all honesty, I didn't know. I was so insecure. I didn't think I was worthy. And so the only thing that I had was my experiences. And with my limitations, I did not think that I would be worthy enough to get hired in competitive employment at all. I had a terrible experience. I found a job independently because I know how to do that as an OMS worker. I told them I wanted to work part-time, told them that I had a brain injury, disclosed everything, and they were not willing to give me any accommodations whatsoever. And it was my experience is that my work is a cookie cutter cutout of what I was supposed to do for the people that I serve, and they had the same limitations, yet they didn't do the same for me. And that quickly ended, which solidified again, I'm not worthy. And the hypocrisy of, you know, here I worked for social services agencies, worked with and supported people with brain injuries, and yet the very companies that I worked for are not very nice or respectful to me about coming back and finding anything that would still consider me a value employee and adapt with my limitations. So that depressed me even more. I mean, really, Chris, it was a very dark time. So here I got a job on my own, and then, yeah, you know, I was terminated, trying my hardest, sharing with them my limitations, and this manager not even listening. So
yeah, I can see how that would have felt very deflating.
Very much. And I wonder about, you know, the people that are in the same situation going into a job that doesn't work with Kaposia, because Kaposia is such a bridging of, hey, we're invested in this journey together to partnership, and we are creating a partnership with the job that you are accepting and sustaining. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And, you know, I mean, I happen to, as you know, and Dupree knows, and probably most of our audience knows, I happen to work for Kaposia as well. And I know exactly what you have meant to us and in our process, and particularly with, you know, new people having interest in and possibly working with us. What has it meant to you to be back in the workforce these last couple of years?
The world. Everybody has a purpose in life. And I always told people that I supported, God doesn't make a mistake when he made you. And I didn't believe that in my instance anymore. And so when this job coach found Kaposia and was able to snag an interview, it was, okay, once again, here we go. But I'm going to be my authentic and transparent self.
Sure.
And if it's not a good fit, then I won't be able to be fruitful in the position. And you creating, Kaposia creating a job description for me was like an answer to a prayer. I love getting up in the mornings, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings, to go to work. One of the things that I tell parents and individuals when they contact me, because I'm the first person that they contact at Kambodja, is that these people walk the walk. They listen. They accommodate. They do a very lengthy employment discovery, which is so different than the cookie cutter cutout with Voc Rehab and the Minnesota job service area, where you have employment expiration, creative job search. By the way, I taught those classes.
Oh, yes, yes.
But this was more in depth. And what I found, I was so scared at the very beginning that I was going to make all these mistakes. And, you know, I've had a lot of surgeries here. And I was scared that you guys were going to let me go. And all my fears were unfounded. I can't believe how accommodating both you and Dana are for my disability barriers. It means a lot to me.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but just so you know, it brings tremendous value to what we do. So we don't look at it as accommodating. We look at it as the word lucky to have you providing the service for Kambodja. There's a saying in you know, in customer service about when you are first having that interaction with a customer. That is the moment of truth. And so you are the first moment of truth at Kambodja, and you hit a home run every time. And it's been a great asset, you know, to our process and to the people we support. So, yeah, so it's been fabulous. Well, this has been amazing, truly, hasn't it, Dupree? I know Dupree doesn't have a mic, so I'm not sure if you can hear him, but he – you can see a smile. You have a smile that could light up a room.
Yeah,
it's been so fun watching good. You as the host over there. Yeah. And I see some real potential in the future for this ABSI podcast.
Oh yeah, thank you, Chris. You know, I appreciate it. Lise was a great you know, first opportunity. She's very good. And I listened, you know, when I do hosting, sometimes I might have to talk too much. And sometimes I try to tell myself, like, you know, I have to learn how to listen. And I think I've learned it when I watch the podcast here at Minnesota ABSI podcast. And I just see you, Chris, just listening and stopping and things and you're letting the guests shine. So that's just something that I really wanted to take in. You know, Lise, thank you for, you know, hopefully I'll ever have opportunity to work with you and hopefully serve and things like that. So it's very good opportunity. So thank you so much. And thank everybody for having me. And yeah, Chris, it was good.
And let's ask Lise together, if you will. Lise, could you share with us just any final words of hope that you have, you know, for individuals that might face some of the similar barriers and just barriers in general, you know, hopes that you have for the future of employment for people with disabilities and challenges?
Thank you, Chris. This was the key point that I disclose to individuals who I believe it's the right timing that I am disabled and that I work remotely, to give that person hope, our parents' hopes that are at their wits' end with the social services system. And I can be very colorful in my language, but I'm very honest. And it's not offensive. And to let them know, hey, you need to have perseverance and patience through this system. but I also provide them with resources as well.
Right.
Dana has been awesome. Mm-hmm. I have voiced, hey, can I give this mm-hmm. person resources? But also a personal testimony as well is don't give up the boat. It is hard, but don't give up. Yeah. And my last words for the audience, for my hopes and dreams, is I really want to get my voice out there in the community, in the state. I would like to go national. I think it's very important. Look, I'm older than dirt. I got nothing to lose, right? But I can give younger people hope. And politically, this environment, it's going to be even more challenging. And yet, you know, to keep up the good work. So that is my mm-hmm. dream.
Yeah.
And to stay with composure until I'm 83, because that's... That's the age that I tell myself that
40 years from now.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. And Dana will be right by my side and, it, yeah. you know, completely gray haired. But to work for a company that I just value so much means a lot to me. And to continue to have more responsibility and yet find that balance within my disability barriers.
That's great. Thank you, Lise. And I hope you don't mind me saying, just from my perspective and what I'm hearing you say, I'm glad that you were able to come to a place in your heart where you knew you could work and you knew you could add value, because it sounded like it took some time to get there. And that is such a key piece of what we do and what we help, you know, the folks that we support do, is to believe in their heart that they not only can work, but they can add value to a place of business. And it's not just about, oh, getting a chance. It's about adding value. It's the businesses that folks are working for are receiving as much value as the person, you know, providing the work. And I think we all three know, you know, here just what work means to people. I know what it means to me. I don't think my life would be anywhere close to as fulfilling if I didn't have, you know, a career in that part of my life. So it's a huge thing. And yeah, so thank you. Thank you. And what do you think, Debrie? Should we say it one more time? Let's all lean in here, kind of utilize our mics. On the count of three, let's all say it together. First, thanks for joining us today. It's been a fabulous episode. I'm very excited to that we are able to have you here today, Lise. And just remember, everybody out there, one, two, three. If you believe it, you can achieve it.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't say that.
That's all right. You can say it now.